Are you often unhappy, still reacting to life from old wounds? There is a gentle way to get yourself unstuck, unleashing your natural creativity. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book series Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love seminars, Love Touch Heal Relationship System, and the 30 Love Lessons for Your Soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can, and it often does, get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. Lynn Singer is an actress, renowned voiceover professional and voice coach. She calls on her gifts to release people from the bondage that has been of their own making. She shares the pain, sorrow, and loss that she had to endure before her own awakening. Her book, Breaking into Brilliance, is a new form of edu entertainment, a way to show people the path while engaging all of their senses. And I look forward to hearing about this. Her goal is to help us combat the hopelessness and resignation that so many of us feel today. So I'm delighted to welcome you, Lynn Singer.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here. I'm not acting anymore, though. I am writing, and I am coaching voice and acting and breaking into brilliance. I've had a lot of legs in my life. Photography as well with the Greek government.
Yeah, I wanted to just make a statement that we are always acting to some extent. I couldn't have
Well,
done that.
Yeah, but professional acting takes a whole other being to do. It really is a skill and an art that is a lot more complex than most people recognize. People think they walk and talk that they too can be a great star, you know. But in fact, that's not true. I'm here to say that. It's not true. It takes an internal understanding.
Shelley Winters, a wonderful actress, was talking about the pain of going into her emotions in order to act.
Yes, yes it is. And that's something that people don't recognize, that it takes years of practice and opening the doors to an emotional life. Some people have a quickness to their emotional life and they're able to move through it, but they don't necessarily focus it very well. Other people can focus it, and some people have the gift of it. However, they do have to search for it. It's very much more complex than most people want to know about. If they did know that, they wouldn't be so quick to say, you know, I can do it, too. They really wouldn't. I have many people come and say, you know, I can do what they do. I can paint that picture. I can act that. And then they begin to do some work on themselves with it. And it's a whole other ballpark, actually. But it's always exciting, and I do think that acting exercises and improvisational exercises particularly is something that would benefit every single person on the planet, because you get out of your own way and you allow yourself to do things that you wouldn't do in your day-to-day, and you find hidden gifts, hidden parts of yourself. I think most people, when they work with acting work just as a way of releasing some of their bondage, they find that they feel a freedom and a willingness to sort of make a fool out of themselves, which they normally wouldn't do in life. And it's a wonderful thing for people to try. I've never given an acting class just for non-actors, but I think they should be around it, and people would benefit.
Well, I took a class in New York City with Stella Adler, you know, a long time ago. I'm very good. I'm an Aries, and I jump in, and I did something quickly. But then as we got into it, it was no acting. It was like, be a photographer or be this or that and feel the feelings. And I had no concept of what it's like to be a photographer. And then we were listing what we loved and what we hated, and I didn't know what I loved and hated. So it was such an experience in realizing what I wasn't able to do.
Yeah. Wow. And to just jump in and be a photographer, I mean, that's kind of a silly thing to say, really, you know. You don't know what it is. You have to start putting that kind of thing together and asking yourself questions of, like, who would I be? You know, what would I be looking for? Why would I be wanting to do that kind of work? There's, like, so many questions to ask whenever you're creating a character. But it's extraordinary work. It's extraordinary. So, did you like working with Stella Adler?
Oh, it was a beautiful experience. But many of the people in the class were already actors and actresses, you know, and they were really skilled. So once I saw that, I got very inhibited. You know, it became difficult. And I also had an experience of what really goes into acting.
Right.
I think if I took a class now, I would understand so much more, you know, and be able to do it more. Even though it takes a lot out of you, you're really revealing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go on and ask you, I'd like to have you tell us your background, how you got into acting and into the voiceovers. Give us a little of your background about this.
I was actually working with design and costuming and helping to create costumes. And I had a psychotic incident. I was very young. It was after college, and I had gone to Europe for a few months, and I came back to New York. I'd grown up in Connecticut, so I always wanted to be in New York, living in Greenwich Village, and I'm right above the village, actually, and be with the artists. That's all I knew about what I wanted to do. I hadn't taken it any further than that. Though I secretly wanted to be on stage, I was very frightened of it. I was frightened of the exposure, of showing myself that deeply, because that hadn't been my experience when I was young. And I also think I had some hidden stories at the time that I didn't know about prior lives, you know. So I did have this incident, and it opened up parts of my subconscious that I was not completely fully attuned to. And it was scary. It was very scary. But 4 months later, I was in acting classes, and I had said to somebody I was living with, I'm stopping everything. I'm going into acting. I'm going to take classes, and you're going to pay for it. And he said, okay, which was amazing. So that was a kind of extraordinary moment. I remember exactly where I was in a garden when that happened. And that led to a lot of acting, that led to a lot of plays, and mostly plays, but very quickly voiceovers. I got my Screen Actors Guild card on my first audition. I had an unusual voice and I had acting technique. I also was always asked to help teach. People were always asking me to work with them on their monologues. They just sensed in me something that I didn't know about yet. But I was working with people, and then I was on my own in New York, and teaching became a part of what I was doing, continuing to do voiceovers, continuing to do some acting. But more and more I was doing voiceover work, and I was doing work at on committee work at Screen Actors Guild. I couldn't keep everything up. I had to make a choice, and I did. But acting was the most powerful thing I have ever done until I wrote this book. And after, years later, when I was still doing voiceovers, at the very end, there was a moment in time when the whole advertising agencies turned around and things were beginning to collapse. And my voiceover career got very, very, very low. I had always been taking pictures, always been taking black and white photography, and I had an amazing printer who had worked with. He became my teacher, really. He had worked with, like, the 20th century giants. And I didn't even know that. I was just given his name one day because I needed to create some prints, and he became a good friend and a teacher. So I began to work with the Greek government on shows because what I wanted to show were my Greek photographs. And that led to a small show about the Olympics as well. And all of this work of artwork, drawings, photography, voiceovers, teaching acting, all of it went into the book. My dearest friend is in Tel Aviv, and she left a message on my machine. Okay, this was before we had everything digitalized. This was 10 years ago. She left a message saying, "I dreamt you published a book." It was a big book, and she was very descriptive about it and how I had come to Israel because it had been translated, and she is something of a seer, so I had to take her seriously, and I went to Israel to sit down with her and talk about it and say, what's going on, you know, what do you think this book is about? So we got very clear that it was about art and transformation and communication, and I went home and I began to just paste things into a big art book and write and write and write and write, and I didn't know what to do with it. And one of my students, who became a friend, is a wonderful writer, actually an award-winning writer. He is very special. He looked through the whole book, and he created the chapter heads. So I was on my way, but that was 9 years ago, and while this was going on and while I was writing it, I always knew that I had to voice it. So that meant it had to be online. And then, and I don't know why, but little by little, the recognition that it should be animated, the picture should be animated, the drawing should be animated. And I knew I needed a workbook, so that became a part of it too. There's an interactive workbook. So everything I've done for most of my life is in Breaking Into Brilliance. And the core of it is to help people who are really frightened about knowing why they are on the earth, and also not only just on the earth, but to hold their dreams. Most people are very frightened of holding their dream and taking a hold of the courage to put it into the world. That's what this book is for. And it looks like a children's book, but it's for adults. It's a children's story for adults.
Well, what's amazing is that it's the timing of it, because now there are so many coloring books out there. So people are starting to see adults coloring. But that's just one sense.
Right. Well, I'm calling it a children's book for adults, not that it is a children's book at all. It's for adults, but it has the playfulness and inspiration of, there's just a lightness in it with an undertone, a very serious, because I'm speaking about things that are very serious, and I'm bringing up dreams and how we talk about our dreams and how we talk to our subconscious and how we talk, looking at our younger self and seeing who we are and asking questions about why we are afraid to move forward. But because it's animated and because the drawings are very light, even when they're strong, they look like cartoons, there is a playfulness to the whole book, which makes it feel more childlike. And that was my intent. I don't want to be browbeating people, you know, with all the heavy information that could go into a book about change and transformation. I think you have to lead people in very gently, because it's very scary.
About scary, I'm thinking about men who come in for counseling with their wife. I have seen many men who are so afraid to come in because they feel like they're going to be browbeaten, that everyone's going to jump on them and criticize them, you know, the way they feel their wife has. And people get that all the time. If they have a problem with overeating, they get criticized. If they have a problem with drinking, with anything.
I think that's changing a lot. I think that the mind-body-spirit community has a very different focal point about how to address things in general, you know, to bring a kindness and a compassion to people, and especially to those kind of men who are so, it's almost like they've become two-dimensional, you know, they're frightened of looking at who they really are. They're frightened of looking inward at what causes the problems. My father got sick. My stepfather got sick. And I grew up in New Haven, and somebody at Yale had written a very strong book about you've created your disease. You can heal it. And somebody brought that book to my father, and he threw it against the wall. He was so angry.
I'm not surprised. First of all, I lived in Connecticut for many years, so I'm very familiar with
Yes, but the old school thinking wasn't just, you know, it was permeated throughout the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thinking.
Yes.
Was what has been until very recently this kind of heavy-handed, puritanical, judgmental way of dealing with people. And keeping yourself, you know, we have to keep all of our inwards very quiet. We can't really show our shadow self or talk about it in any way, because we're just going to end up in a very difficult situation. And that's changing, which is wonderful. It's wonderful. I'm so thankful for that, you know. Even with therapy, I had one therapist who, she was very judgmental. And she was always telling everybody what to do. And that was very difficult.
There's a current emphasis on evidence-based therapy. And some of that takes away from what it takes to really do that inner work, because it's too focused on immediate results.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, I've heard that too. And I see it. I mean, I've seen it with certain, there are, Well, but it, you know, I'm stuttering about this because I think that sometimes the kind of therapy that there was and that there still is, and I know I was in one, they just want to look at the dark side. What are you doing? What are the bad things? Let's get rid of the bad things. Let's look. And so you're never looking at the positive parts of who you are. And so maybe it's a reaction to that kind of therapy.
Very interesting. And then there's the coaching looking at, you know, only the future, like, you know, 90 days to do this, and they're not looking into the depth of the past. So some combination. Sounds like your book is kind of doing it all in a playful way.
Well, no, I don't I don't even begin to think I'm doing it all. I do begin with the unconscious leading to freedom. So I think it's helpful for us to do some writing about the problems, you know, and to just look at them very, very square in the face, like, what went on here? Why do I think this way? Why do I keep acting this way? You know, I keep drinking, or I keep having too much sex, or I keep eating too much. What's underneath that? To just ask it in a way that's just very straightforward. What do you think is driving you? Because you're feeling badly about it. So the way to not feel badly about it is to look it in the eye and say, okay, come on in, let's have a conversation, you know? And that is very helpful. And the journal that's in Breaking Into Brilliance is about that. It's about just writing to yourself about all the things you want to write. I question, and I have a visual on each page. There's a visual and a question or a statement and asking you to do something. You can change my visual, take it out, put your own in. I originally wanted to be able to put in movies and music and anything and everything that was going to inspire us, but it would have taken a year to open up a page. You know, we don't have the technology for that yet. So, excuse me. Yeah. But so I'm trying to do some of the uncovering in a way that is easier, just easier, and also doesn't have a heavy handle of judgment on it. It's just like a question. Answer the question if you like, you know. And even at the very beginning of the book, I say, you know, just look around. See if a page interests you. And just wander through and see what might come to mind, and that is good, then maybe at some point you'll want to start at the beginning. So that there's no, you must do this, this is the only way, this is the way you've got to do it in order to get better. None of that. It's because I don't think it works. And I know that I was working with somebody for a while, and a part of me was getting better, but a part of me was getting worse. And then I knew I had to leave.
I have some questions here. Like, you use storytelling. How do you use that to help people?
Well, I think that anything... Well, let me backtrack. In acting, when people are working on their voice, I found that most people that I worked with had a defended voice, like if I had, you know, grown up talking like this and holding in my throat, or if I began to do this and I was very nasal. We find a way, because the voice is so powerful, and the people can hear what you really feel when you put your voice out to the world. Even if you're not saying it, they unconsciously feel it. And so I would have people do an emotion memory exercise. And this is something that actors do in order, what Shelley Winters was talking about, the pain of the emotion, in order to open up a particular place in themselves that will help the character at a certain moment in the story. emotion memory exercises would be done. So I would say to them, to my students, for their voice, because I wanted to hear the real voice. The voice, it of course it would still need power and I'd still need to be working on language with them, but I wanted to hear that uncovered place of their soul. And I would ask them to bring in a story about when they betrayed themselves and didn't speak up. And like what happened as you are getting to that moment, and then the moment itself, and then the aftermath. And it always, by the end of telling that story, which was very detailed usually, they would write it before, but they weren't allowed to memorize it. And they would look, they would do it by looking at somebody straight in the eye, not me, but one of their other people they were working with. By the end of that story, their voice was flooding the room. So that's one instance of how to use storytelling. People can write the story of their life. And they can keep on writing it and writing it and writing it, and they're telling the same story over and over and over and over again to themselves, so they don't move forward. I like the idea of writing a new story of your life, writing the story, rewriting things that happened that don't let you move forward, and rewriting those events. It's like a visualization. You rewrite those events so that you can move more easily where you want to go. Because what I'm after with people is that they find the core of courage to own the life they want, to own what they want to do in their life. Like, for instance, doing this book has been really hard. It's taken a lot of time, it's taken a lot of people, and it's taken a lot of money. And I just had to say to myself, it's going to be worth it. You know, you just have to do that. I had to have the courage to say, well, it's going to come out and something's going to happen and you'll pay your debts and you'll pay all the people that have worked with you. You will find. I just, for 2 years, I wasn't sleeping because of it. But I knew the book should be in the world. So I took the leap. It was hard.
Wow.
But I did it. And but because I've done it, I think I can help other people do it.
Wow. That's a beautiful description of what people go through. They don't want to take that leap. So they
right.
stay without the courage.
Right. Well, they get scared. They have to change their life. No, I have to do this. I have to do that. How can I do that? You know, I've got this job. I have these children. Well, you know, you can start. You do both. You can keep the job and you can do it at night or you can do it on weekend. And you move into a new way of thinking. And you might have to do it slowly or not. Some people just, I remember reading about, I can't remember who it was, but it was one of our great musicians. And he said he just one day stopped everything and said, life is not about making money. And not life is not about paying the rent. The rent has got to be paid, but that's not what my life is going to be about. Which is really a wonderful way of saying it. Yes, the rent has got to be paid, but that's not what life is about. And he went on to,
that
you know.
That is so true.
Yeah.
But there are people who get stuck in that aspect, and they never make the money. So there has to be a combination, you know.
Well,
doing
I think
what it
that,
takes to also
yep.
monetize.
I think that it's all a process. It's all, yep, yes, it all, you have to take care of yourself. But if you're taking care of yourself at the expense of your soul, then you're not taking care of yourself.
Beautiful,
so it's a tricky line, right?
So that brings me to another question. And I have
okay.
a feeling it's connected to what you just said about how does poetry fit into healing all of this and getting you to have the courage?
Oh, wow. Poetry is more and more and more and more as I live. Poetry becomes more and more deepened in me. I took a degree in literature. I ran away from the girls' school and from New England, and I went to California. And I fell in love with a boy. I was at Berkeley and then in San Francisco. And he is a poet and was a poet. And we were living together when we were very young. And I took a degree in literature. And I didn't know this at the time. But I took that degree because I needed to know what the writers knew. They knew something that I didn't know. And I wanted to know what that was. And I was surrounded mostly by actors, filmmakers, and writers. And a couple of the writers became very well known. And I later realized that what was the secret I was looking for? The secret I was looking for was humanity, of course. What's the secret in the poet's heart, you know? What's the secret in the writer's heart? But more than that, it's astrologically, poetry is in the same place as music. It's not considered astrologically. It's not considered literature or painting. You know, it's not in that pool. It's actually in music. And it's mystical. There's a mysticism in poetry. And what I mean by that is it is talking to the truth. And it's speaking to the truth. It's speaking to awaken the intuition and to allow us to hold ourselves in our own sensitivity in a place that we're not necessarily used to. And I think that helps us know more about ourselves, and the more we can gather that, the more we might be willing to expose who we really are to the world, our sensitivities, our intuition, our sense of truth and God and heaven. The more we activate ourselves with poetry, poetry can certainly help our language. I'm actually introducing poetry for the very first time. I'm using it deliberately to awaken the voice in a voice class that I'm going to be giving in a couple of weeks at the Open Center in New York. Anybody listening from New York? June 14th. But I'm going to use the tenets, the principles of poetry. I've brought in poetry little by little to other classes, but this is about how poetry can deepen your sense of yourself in language, make you more eloquent, make you more concise and powerful and connected in a poetic way to yourself and into the world, which would, of course, increase your any kind of performance or any kind of presentation or even just your day-to-day involvement with people. You will be speaking with greater clarity, greater imagery, you know. You'll become infused with a kind of poetic characters, which I think is amazing.
I would love to share something with you about poetry. When I was living in Westport, Connecticut, I went to a poetry reading group. We used to share our poems. And a man got up and read a poem. He was from Poland. And he wrote this poem while he was in a concentration camp. And he was about the flowers outside and trees, you know, the beauty outside. He wrote that in a poem, and at the point that he was reading it, he was living in Westport, Connecticut in the spring with flowers all around. So he was living it finally, but he wrote it at a time when he could have been in despair and terrified.
Well, he wrote it in order to keep himself alive. You know, I mean, the camps had no beauty. They had nothing like that. So he was keeping himself alive. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Right. I never forgot the story. I don't remember the person's name, but that stayed with me.
Well, that's
poetry.
So poetry is like music. You know, when you are, I think the first step to get to yourself is to really ask yourself some questions like, why am I doing what I've been doing, though I don't like what I'm doing, and where did that come from, and, you know, those kind of questions. But also, music turns our head around. So if we are always depressed, if we won't ask ourselves any questions, at least start listening to music and start reading some poetry, because they are inextricably linked. And they will help to move you into a place of much greater love of yourself and of the world, I believe.
All right, next question. How does photography and animation, how does that affect our shift in consciousness and developing
courage?
Well,
the reason why I've got all of that in the book is because most books are like self-help books, and they're written and it's just words. And I wanted to bring, I was unconsciously doing this, but I knew I had to do something else, to bring in all the senses. So I don't have smell. I don't have it papered. I don't know how to do that on the internet. I mean, the book is coming out without the senses on Amazon, so maybe I could have perfumed the pages. I don't know. But I, you know, to bring the senses alive, to awaken the senses, and to see drawings and animation, to watch something moving while you're listening to me talking about something. You can listen to me or you can read it yourself, but you've got other senses that are activated. So the animation of the drawings and the photographs is another level of awakening for the reader. That was my intent. Something else needed to be happening, not just words on the page. And my voice, you know, I've done a lot of vocal work, and I've been in the recording studio most of my life. And so I was hoping that my voice would activate something in them, in my readers as well.
Wow. I have to share with you that I have this book series, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and one of the books is Let All Your Senses Speak As You Heal.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I have a page on what are you smelling, what are you hearing, what are you seeing, what are you touching, you know, and I have like a poetic, I've been told that the book, that Breaking Into Brilliance, which, by the way, they can go to breakingintobrilliance.com. They can see your listeners can see a minute trailer. So it'll give them a sense of what it is. But I've been told that the book is poetic. It's childlike and it's poetic at the same time. And so when I say, what am I seeing here? It's all, you know, attempting to bring it into another, not just, oh, there's beautiful blue out here and beautiful red, but again, a bit of a story in three lines, right? Storytelling
it's just so impressive how much of your life's work you've brought into this. I just have one more question. We're sort of running out of time. And I know that you use it differently probably than other people do. How do you use meditation in your work and in your book?
In my book, the meditations are really breathing exercises.
Mm-hmm.
I have done a lot of work with breathing. And I have different meditations. I mean, in the book, the breathing, you know, there's enough meditation out there. People, there's many ways. I wanted to do it differently. And so the in breaking into brilliance. I didn't even do this consciously, but I realized it later that I brought in some acting exercises, costume your essence, for instance, and I brought in breathing exercises that get a little bit deeper. There's like, I think, four of them, and they deepen as you go through breaking into brilliance. And I do a variety. I do visualizations, and I also do I do meditation through the repetition of either a prayer or a mantra. And sometimes I just do sitting breathing work. I just sit and I breathe. And I consciously slow myself down with a count of four, taking in four, breathing out four, and also with a singing bowl, you know, using a singing bowl to work on, to work with the four count. So on every four count, I ring the singing bowl. And it depends on the day. I have not done a formal class in meditation, except where I am at a yoga center. At my yoga center, they do meditate at the end of every class. There is a minute or two meditation, and in some of them, there's also meditation every noon. I think there's a meditation for an hour, and so you can do that, and some of it is repeating Sanskrit prayers. There's many ways, and I think one has got to find the thing that's right for them. You think everybody's got to look for the meditation that's right for them. I will tell you this, though, in a sitting meditation, in the chair that I'm sitting in right now, just doing a breathing meditation last year, I suddenly saw the planets hanging in black space. And I saw it for about 4 seconds, and it was scary and it was thrilling. I just felt I was in the middle of space, and I could feel these round balls that were like, I don't know what, I have no idea where I was seeing, but there was dark space and these round, and I knew I was looking at inside of a galaxy. It was amazing.
Wow, how amazing. Amazing.
I've never gotten it again.
Wow. It happens in a moment. That's a cosmic consciousness moment. That's beautiful.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to have to end. So I would love two things. Just please share again how people can get your book or get in touch with you, and then maybe some final words of what you would recommend for people.
Create the life you want, no matter what it takes. Just jump off the cliff. When you jump off the cliff, the universe is there to support you. I know, because I had to do it. I could have left the earth. It was so bad for a while because it was so scary. I knew I had to come back and do it again, so I wasn't going to go. But I just kept jumping, and it kept getting better. So I just want to encourage people, certainly not to have to do what I did, because that was where I had to go. But however they are going, try a little bit of a jump. Don't even do a cliff. Just take a few steps and jump off and see what happens. So you can find me at breakingintobrilliance.com is where you can find Breaking Into Brilliance. And I can be found, my email is lynn@lynn-singer.com, which is lynn-singer.com is one of my websites as well. All the book and all of the offerings for working with me are at breakingintobrilliance.com. There are free things, gifts, many different things, and I would love it if somebody from your audience would send me an email. That would be just enchanting. lynn-singer.com and breakingintobrilliance.com. Create the life you want, no matter what it takes.
Thank you so much for participating today. This was just beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm very grateful.